Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. As Damian said, I'm the co-host of the Politician podcast, which the two of us host, along with our amazing team. Now, we have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys once again with, a person we haven't had on yet. She's one of our team members, Julia Hartman. She's our research director here at Politician, and she's one of the most integral parts of our team. You know, she powers every single one of our interviews, sessions and our podcast. So Julia is just a person we appreciate and love a lot. If you guys want to get firsthand, impressions of, and you want to communicate with Julia more in person, join our, Patreon. Becoming a patron, as we said before, gives you our opportunity to join our community in which you can kind of communicate with the whole team here at Politician and recommend some content, make suggestions, join Q&As with our whole team. And so it's a good way to communicate with all of our team. But, without further ado, I want to let Julia introduce herself for all of our listeners today. Julia?
Well, hi, I'm Julia Hartman, and like Varun said, I'm the head researcher for Politician. And if anyone ever wants to get in contact with me, you can also DM on Instagram, and I'll probably be the person responding to you on there.
Yeah, that's our Politician show Instagram, for those of you wondering. But it's another unorthodox episode, Varun, and I'm really excited for this one. Like I said, I talked about it last time. You know, having a conversation with a politician is one thing, but having a conversation with someone who's not a politician, I feel like sometimes can just be so much better. And speaking of someone who's not a politician, we're also going to have an amazing guest on this Friday, Zach Bornstein. Yeah. So you guys should be tuned in for that episode. It should probably come out either, you guys are either going to already have seen that, or it's going to come out this Monday. Either way, go check us out on the platform that you're watching us and look for that episode. If it's not out yet, stay tuned. It should be out in a couple days. And if it is, be sure to listen to that one because I'm sure that one's going to be absolutely amazing. But let's get on with this episode. So in the tradition of it being unorthodox, we're trying to absolutely move away from the question kind of, the asking questions really standpoint of it. Yeah. So we just, I think that the reason that we really, really, really wanted to have Julie on is because she's very knowledgeable and she offers a very interesting and unique perspective, as do, all of our guests. But, it was a conversation that came up last podcast, if I'm not mistaken, the one that we had with Brad and Tarun, where we started talking about abortion for a little bit. And we were like, we really have to have a female's perspective on it. And we've been dying to do this for a while. And, who better than Julia to kind of bring on the podcast? You know, she's on our team and she's an integral part of our team. And we really wouldn't be able to do anything with anything at all without her. So that's why we're bringing Julia on for this amazing conversation. I'm really excited to have it, to be honest.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. I think it's really important to remember that, you can't really talk about abortion without having women involved in the conversation. And I think that's been a lot of the issue this year when you see all male groups making laws on women's bodies, and I personally think that's really problematic. So I think that it's good that we're doing this, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard not to have a woman's voice in these issues. I mean, we're seeing more representation in Congress, but it's still not enough. Women aren't represented in daily life. Congress, it is a very, very hard issue to face in today's world. I think people just don't recognize it, Julia. I think that people just don't understand the implications and consequences because, as much as race is an issue right now, so is, sexism and things like that. So I want to talk to you about how has it been politically? Do you think women are well represented in politics, or is that something that you don't think is prevalent right now? Because I don't think it is, to be honest with you.
I definitely think it's better, but I think also as a woman, they tend to face more scrutiny and things that they wouldn't have to deal with as men. I mean, you see that all the time with congresswomen. It's a lot of double standards, I think. And I think there's definitely more representation. So that's good. But I still don't think it's like nowhere near enough, if that makes sense. But.
You know, from the outside looking in, and I remember this because of the episode that we had with Dr. Neil Lester, and I always think about this every time that we record the podcast, because it's interesting how you can really not consider an issue an issue. And I don't know why this just passed my mind, but healthcare, as you guys were talking, I feel like women's healthcare isn't really mentioned because women have their own unique needs. And I feel like it's
Absolutely.
something that's absolutely overlooked, like the fact that
Your
we still have to,
childbirth, abortion,
yeah,
things like that.
exactly. Well, even beyond that in particular, like female hygienic needs, like it's a conversation that I feel
Absolutely.
like a lot of people aren't ready to have, but we have to pay
I
for
think the
them.
issue, Damien,
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to interject here because I think the issue here is that it's hard for some people to talk about, which it shouldn't be. But for some people, it's increasingly hard to talk about, like, slavery and history curriculums and things like that, the hard history behind the issues. I think there's a hard science behind some things. And it shouldn't be as hard as it is right now for us to really confront these issues head on because they affect people in our society, our equals. And I think that for us to kind of get past that, Damien, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but
No worries.
I want to get past that by making sure we don't have implicit sexism. Right, sexual bias based upon gender. And one of the issues I see right now is on Democratic and Republican standpoints, both of the parties, push forth this idea of electability, right? Electability of a person, a woman, a candidate. And every single time a woman comes up, her name comes up in an election, there's always a question of electability. That shouldn't be a question, right? And if we have more women in politics, we're strong. We saw Kamala Harris a couple of weeks ago during the debate. She said, "Mr. Vice President, I am speaking." And women across the nation feel that every single day. I mean, what do you think about this whole situation, Julia?
I think personally, I was watching the debate when she said that, and I was so happy because I mean, there's been so many times where I feel like I'm interrupted during a conversation and things are mansplained, kind of. And it was really amazing to see someone just not put up with that anymore. I've gotten a lot better, I think, with standing my ground and keep talking, but it's been hard. And especially, I know a lot of my friends that are in STEM classes, they are like talked over all the time, especially by men. And it's really hard in that. So I think it was really good for everyone to see her just not take that from Pence.
Yeah, women in like this the STEM field, I can imagine that that's difficult, right? Like we're talking about them on the political field, but even on the STEM field, I feel like there's a lack of representation now that I think about it. But it's like it's these issues that we kind of just look over, right? Like we're just like, oh, whatever, like it can't be that serious. But even when I'm thinking about it, like I'm trying to think of occurrences where I'm mansplaining, and I don't know if it'd be implicit. Do you th what do you think? Because obviously I can only offer my perspective, and my perspective is I'll interrupt someone if they're wrong. Like I don't care if they're a girl or if they're a boy, male, female, whatever they want to associate themselves as. I'll just interrupt a person, I guess. So what do you think is the difference between just someone? Because I guess what I'm trying to get to is I feel like some people just have taken it too far, and I'm on the outside looking in, absolutely, so I can't really speak for it, but like from what I'm saying is if you keep using the like overusing a term, it loses its meaning. So what is the difference between mansplaining and just being a man who happens to interrupt a woman?
I mean, I think that, I mean, having conversations with you, I know you always speak your mind, which is a good thing, and let someone know if they're wrong. And I'm sure you're not ever intentionally trying to mansplain things. But I think men do have to be careful. I think with a lot of people, it's not intentional, but they do tend to overexplain and maybe interrupt more when they are talking to a woman versus when they are talking to a man. And I think a lot of times they're not doing it intentionally. But I think if men would try to be more aware, too, they could catch themselves while they're doing it. And I also think it's important for women to try to call them out on it when they are doing it so everyone can improve. But I definitely think a lot of times it's not intentional. It's just something that they've always been doing their whole lives, and society doesn't exactly help with that. So,
Yeah, it makes sense.
yeah, I mean, it's hard to get past implicit biases. It
Yeah.
takes a lot from our community. We talk about STEM, women in STEM. We have tons of, women in STEM programs, but those aren't going to actually hit the root cause of this, right? Those may help to a certain degree, but the real issue is in mentalities. And to bridge that mentality gap, it is so, so, so implicit. Like Julia said, it's about targeting every single microaggression, Every single little transgression you feel against a certain, sex, gender thing, whatever you you feel, you have to get rid of that. And it just begins with being super hyper aware.
You know who's good at that, Varun?
Who?
Torin.
Yeah, no, she's definitely good at that.
She's really good at it.
She calls you out.
Yeah.
Right. So one of our friends, she'll call us out whenever we're having these kinds of microaggressions, and people take it the wrong way, right? But it really is us understanding. It's to help us, right? Because in the future, it's going to help generations and generations of women. So I think that, first of all, it's men reading and understanding from the news and science and things like that what makes up a microaggression. And also, women coming out, and sometimes it's not the responsibility, right? But sometimes it may help to tell men and not be scared of it that, you're making a mistake. You're overstepping your bounds. And it's often very, it's not comfortable. Even for men telling women, it's not very comfortable sometimes. But
it can make an awkward situation.
Because we have to understand what we're doing. And, I think that people say that sexism doesn't exist. Gender gap doesn't exist. The gender wage gap is here right now. Women make 82% compared to males, right? 82% out of every male's income is how much women make. So these things are existing. And racism, you can't. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, but I think you can't fix it until people actually acknowledge the issue. So like you're saying, the fact that people are there is no gender gap or there's no sexism at all. And until people acknowledge that, then nothing's ever going to get fixed. So I think that's a big problem too, like you said, with mentality.
Yeah, well, I have an interesting perspective on the wage gap. I don't think that I'm as informed on it, but that's one thing that I have to come out and I always speak when I'm not informed on a subject either. And I'd love to just talk about the wage gap for a little bit, because it's something that I don't think that I'm acutely knowledgeable in as I may be in other subjects. I remember this kind of brings me back to another episode where we had with Charlie, where I was talking about kind of the science behind being transgender. And it's I'm not aware of it. Like, I am ignorant towards it. So this is my perspective of the wage gap, and I want to be absolutely corrected. So from my understanding, right, or the way that I see it, not from my understanding, the way that I see it is men have put themselves in position of higher earning, such as being CEOs of companies, because first of all, a couple hundred years, or even 100 years ago, they were the only ones that could start companies, right? A female starting a company was not by any means common and welcome, I think. So they have always just been in positions of earning higher money. Beyond that, I think that social norms have pushed men to earn more money. And then a third attributing factor is that, and this can be completely ignorant, so I apologize for anyone that's offended by this, but from the other side, what I've heard is that men are more kind of what we've been talking about, more aggressive in their demeanor and more aggressive in, I wouldn't say that they're more, how do I phrase this? That they're more ambitious, right? I think women are way more ambitious than men, but men, when they want something, they say it, they speak their mind. Men are less likely to sit down. And I think because of societal constructs,
that's partly societal. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of societal constructs, women are more inclined to not speak their mind as often, which I think is an issue. And I'm not denying the wage gap, but I think that the wage gap might exist in a different way than we think. Kind of how I think about white supremacy. Or not white supremacy, white privilege. White supremacy is bad. See, it's totally not different. Hard, Donald Trump.
It's totally not hard. All right, but I want to hear Julia's perspective on what you said, Damien.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think there are definitely multiple factors that contribute to the wage gap. And I do think what you're saying about in the past and how that's still affecting today with the difference that different jobs that women and men have taken in the past. But I do think also, in the same job too. I mean, you see it with actors and actresses all the time. It will be a man and a woman have the same role or the same amount of screen time, and the man is being paid significantly more than the woman is. And I think that, you can't really explain that other than just sexism there. But I mean, I'm trying to think of another way, but if they're having the same amount of screen time, similar role. And then similarly with the women's soccer team, the U.S. soccer team versus the men. I don't know if you're reading about the pay gap with that, but the women's team was actually bringing in more money from viewers than the men's team was, and they were still making less money. So things like that are difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I see what you're saying too, though.
Yeah, no.
It is honestly, I think that Julia, part of the issue is not just like how the reason why they're making less money is because fans don't want to watch the games. And that even is a societal construct, right? Mm-hmm. You know, fans not watching these games is part of a societal premonition and perspective that women can't play sports. So I think that everything is tied back to this very, very broad societal thing. You know, you're looking at the gender gap and the gender wage gap. And I think that it also ties back to the racism and the racial gap we're experiencing in our world. And I think that they both tie together to make some really, really bad consequences upon these communities. You know, a black woman makes 62% of, you know, for every dollar that a man makes, a black woman makes 0.62 cents for every dollar. And that's a big disparity, but you know, a woman in general make 81 cents. That's an even lower disparity compared to regular woman. And I think that the racial gap, you know, combined with this sex gap, it really does create this kind of issue that we're looking at right now. You know, people always talk about black incarceration rate. And I always talk about this because I think it's very important to not just focus upon, you know, the incarceration rates of black men, but the black woman left behind to take care of the family. Right? When you have communities of color and people are getting incarcerated, taken to jail at disproportional rates, that is also causing a disproportional rate of women to get left in the home, made to go find a job, take care of the children all in one. And that's an immense responsibility, right? People don't give women enough credit. And I think that that's a societal norm. We have to normalize, you know, everything and stop focusing upon gender as a dividing factor between our people. Because again, it ties back to everything else we said. We're all humans, and we have to start acting like it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, I think that I was trying to think about that the actress thing that you were bringing up. I think what it could be is it goes back to kind of what I was mentioning earlier, where men have always had higher, like, put themselves in position to be the star in an acting scene, and they've always been in more desired positions. I mean, this isn't saying that women can't do it. This is just stating the fact that men in the past have suppressed women from being in things like action movies, which we know are the highest grossing movies, from being, I mean, lead roles in significant movies. Women, I think, have always been seen as more of a sidekick. And I'm not saying that as my personal opinion. I'm saying that as in the industry, right? In the filmmaking industry. But the thing that's interesting about the soccer situation is, as Julia mentioned, they were actually bringing in more money than the male, yeah, than the men's team. So they were bringing in more money because more people were watching them, because to be honest, the females team was better than the males team. And I'm someone that watches soccer. And I think that, you know, you always talk about cross gender play. I think that the female team could have beat the males team, the men's team. And that's just like, that's not even a joke. Like, the men's team was really bad, and the women's team was really good.
The American team is not very good.
But nonetheless, the issue there, that was like strictly proportions. Like, that was literal percentages that they were not making. Whereas if we look something like at the WNBA, you can't say that you want to make as much as LeBron James because no, like, people aren't watching your games. You know what I'm saying? LeBron James is selling out complete stadiums. So you can't. I can't even name the best player in the WNBA, and that's not, I don't think that's because I'm negligent or that because I'm ignorant. That's just because, again, you know, it goes back to this kind of societal idea that that we just don't, I guess, want to watch women play sports as often. But again, sports is a touchy subject
because
men, I think, as much as we want to try to be equal, we just have, men can't give birth. Like, we have to state facts. I mean, men have just been built to play sports. They've been built to be more athletic. So when they're playing sports, they're going to be more aggressive in their nature, and they're just going to make for better sports. But that doesn't mean that when women are making more money in sports that we need to take percentages away from them. Like, that's being completely negligent on another level. So that was the issue there. It's just suppressing the woman's dollar. That's literally making 82 cents for a dollar. Right. Or in the case of the women, it was like they were making like $2 for every $1 the men was making. And they were only getting like not even a fraction of that. So it was like, that was a really awful situation. But I think that the pay, for example, if LeBron James is making 25% of, let's say, $100,000 every game, right, because that's what he makes per game, then women should be making 25% of whatever they're bringing in, whether it be $10,000 or $50,000. It just needs to be the same across every standard and leave the rest of it up to, you know, the fans watching. We just can't be paying people differently. But does it is it also in other fields? Like, for example, does a female surgeon make less than a male surgeon?
I don't know specifically for surgeons. I'd have to research that
Okay,
specifically,
I guess
but
generally my question was like,
you know
is
what? I'm
it
sure they do. I said it before. 81 cents is what a woman makes for every dollar that a man makes.
okay.
And black woman, 62 cents for every dollar. You know, it's a disproportionate kind of thing.
But again, the only reason that I'm asking it is because is it societal, right? So, for example, are we talking, if we're talking about a surgeon in the same hospital, in the same position, you know, it's that wouldn't be fair for 82 cents, you know, 82 cents on a dollar for every you know, if the man's making a dollar, for the female surgeon to be only making 82 cents. But the issue that we also have to look at is, are these females working at poor hospitals where they're going to get paid less for the same position? Are we comparing this 82 cents on a dollar to a higher up position? And I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm just saying we need to look at where the disproportionality is, because it's also not fair if men are getting promoted to be, you know, head surgeon, I don't know if that's the position, or lead surgeon disproportionately than females are, or more disproportionately than females are. So we got to, I think we have to get to the root of the problem, right? We can't just be like, pay everyone $1 and make it socialism or socialism's a different concept, communism. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I actually looked it up real quick while you were talking,
Well,
and
there
it
you go.
said that on Science Daily, it talked about how female surgeons are earning 24% less per hour while operating compared to male surgeons who are doing like the same
Yeah.
surgery.
Okay.
So I think it's to what you know what Vroom was saying around that 80%.
Yeah, that's 80. That's about 80, what, 86 cents on a dollar? That's, I
And
mean, that's
to
just
what you're
insane.
saying about like society, I know this is going back a little bit, but with sports, I think it's also even when like you're growing up too, when you're a kid. I remember specifically like in elementary school, we had two basketball hoops, and one was like in good shape, and the other one was like sideways and falling apart. And they always divided the class into girls and boys, and we always got the falling over hoop. Like you couldn't even play with it. So then one day, finally, some of us asked, and we were like, "Can we play?" You know, because like none of us were learning how to play. And then the teacher was like, "Oh, I didn't think you guys cared." So I think that's like a idea that's put in the minds of kids ever since, you know, even you're little. Like this must have been like fourth grade that, you know, like girls, oh, you're not gonna do as well anyways. So like we might as well not even teach you. But I'm like, I don't really think you should be limiting people when they're in like third and fourth grade. So I think it's a societal thing too, you know, always like the whole run like a girl and that whole thing. So I think that it does start young, the idea that women's sports aren't as interesting or good or have not as much potential. So I think that's a big problem too.
Yeah, you know, I want to compare it to this, Julia. I want to compare it to a Happy Meal, right? When you're looking at a Happy Meal, a guy's Happy Meal has like Hot Wheels or some kind of sports things in it, but women's Happy Meals, girls' Happy Meals have like Barbies and things like that. The notion that women have to be acting pretty, they buy like little, you know, toy ovens, toy kitchens. My sister had one of those things when she was young. The whole societal notion that women have to live up to in their childhood, as soon as they're kind of growing up in this world, causes what you're saying, Julia. Because every little thing is predicting of this kind of societal consequences. You know, I like to compare it to sexism begins. The gender gap begins with a Happy Meal, right? It is the difference between everything a woman gets versus everything a man gets. You know, when you look at the workforce, Julia, I know you know this. I know you've experienced this. I know tons and tons of women have experienced this in the workforce. When you're seen, when you come out and you're serious and your drive is there, like Damien said, when women have a drive, they're seen as snarky, right? They look down upon for being snarky. And when a woman is warm and nice, they're seen as weak. So what can a woman be? That's the question, because every single thing that they do is perceived as a weakness or as immoral and not in their position, right? Every single time you're in school, you're looking at a career presentation, you're looking at a man, you know, running that career presentation. And I think that it comes down again to the basic idea that a Happy Meal is different based upon who and what gender you're a part of. In the film industry, I think that part of it, Emma Watson was saying this, right? I think it was Emma Watson. She talked about how as much as men discriminate against women, so do women. Women discriminate against women because of the societal consequences and societal norms that make them kind of look down upon themselves and each other, right? It's pervasive in the movie industry. I think that it's beyond beyond men. It's obviously very, very stringent upon this, but I think that it's everybody in the society. We have to change some things. We have to.
Yeah, definitely. And, definitely.
Yeah, you know, we're changing things like, you know, with the whole Black Lives Matter surge happening over the summer. We changed things like Aunt Jemima. We changed things like, I think, the Redskins, right? The Washington football team. These things have happened. And for women, I continue to wonder when these things are going to happen, because you have to understand that these things don't just come up spontaneously. Just because of the perceived notion that women are the same as men in many circumstances, they're not. Right, there's as big of as a gap racially as there is between the genders, and I'll advocate for that in front of anybody.
Absolutely, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I definitely think that the change is happening, but it's slower than it needs to be in a lot of areas.
Absolutely, and just to go back on your point, Easy Bake Ovens always caught my eye. I always, you know, I don't know, there was something about them, like I know what I remember seeing. I remember seeing like the Orbeez foot massage things. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like the spa day Orbeez. Yeah. And I always wanted those. And I was like, I don't know if those are catered to girls or not. So I'm just going to keep playing soccer. But like, I don't know. Some of that stuff looked pretty cool to me. I think girls' toys were always better than boys' toys. Just to girls, societally, girls' toys were better than boys.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Like, they'd always have like the girl and the guy section at Target. But I mean, I think toys are toys and kids shouldn't be, you know, pushed towards one or the other. Because I think that's really starting to limit kids at a young age, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that's good, though, is Varun talks about, and again, I can only say so much because I've only seen so much. You know, Varun was talking about how a woman is seen as snarky when she's ambitious or whatnot. I don't know why. I feel like our perspective has changed somewhat, and women are almost seen as a powerful woman. Like, this idea of the powerful woman has kind of taken place.
You know, Damien, I don't know if it was this, but last time when I talked about Kamala Harris and I talked about Mr. Vice President, I'm talking.
Yeah.
I think that what you said was snarky.
What I said or what?
Yeah, I think that when I asked you about the whole, you know, Kamala Harris situation, I think that you told me that you thought it was snarky. Then I talked to you about how,
yeah,
you know, I think that it's empowering, and you were like, no, I think that I was wrong. You know, I shouldn't have said that. I think I was just saying. You know?
Yeah, no. I get what you're saying. I'm trying to think of the context of what I was saying. I can agree with you 1,000% if I would have said that it was snarky, just because I feel like some people might have perceived it. That's what I'm trying to think of. I'm trying to say, did I personally think it was snarky, or did I think some people could perceive it as snarky?
Right. Either way, it's just
Yeah. Right? But that, I don't think that takes away from the point that I think women are being seen as nonetheless, instead of, you know, I'm sure in some circumstances some people still perceive them as snarky. I think men can be perceived as snarky. I think the president of the United States is snarky all the time, to be quite frank. But what I'm trying to say, and the point that I'm trying to hit, is that this picture of like the powerful woman has taken place. And I don't know necessarily if we can deny that, but nonetheless, I mean, when I think powerful woman, you know, you can say whatever you want about her policies. I think AOC, like, right away, right? I mean, this is just a woman who is powerful. I think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This was a woman that was extremely powerful, you know, not snarky. You know, some people might say otherwise, but it's this notion that a powerful woman, this picture has, I think, been cemented in the mind of society now. And, you know, how far it has come and how far it will come is, I think, yet to be seen. But I think that we can't deny the fact that the seeds have been planted.
Yeah, definitely. I do think it's getting better, but I do think there is still somewhat of a double standard if a woman reacts in like more an emotional way or slightly aggressive versus a man. Like the comments that both of them are going to get, there's definitely going to be a discrepancy there, I think.
Have you experienced stuff like that, Julia, in your like past, or is it something that you have just noticed? How do you, you know, have insight on this?
I mean, I've noticed if I ever get like upset or emotional, I mean, people will make comments like, oh, okay, just, you know, calm down, think about it later, like you're on your period. And I'm like, no, like, sheesh. I'm actually like passionate about this subject and I might get a little bit emotional. But I feel like if a man were to get more aggressive and upset, obviously they wouldn't say that. So I think that that has happened to me before. People say stuff like that more often than you would think, or, you know, like, just calm down, like you're overreacting, you're being emotional. And I think that's a problem too, that people need to watch, you know, what they say that, because I think that has very negative implications. But I don't
Absolutely.
know if y'all have ever experienced that, probably not, but I don't know.
No, no,
No,
no. I think I've said it.
I think the issues that we have, this perception of like this serious woman, right? The serious woman, instead of having like any woman can achieve a level of seriousness, a level of success that's unprecedented. This can happen. And the idea that we have to perceive and imagine the serious woman is what's wrong with society.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about we're all in for context here. We're all in mock trial at our school. And I think about the role that I take, right? This like aggressive I don't even know how to frame it without sounding arrogant. Julia, explain me in mock trial.
Extremely confident.
There you go. Extremely,
Extremely
extremely
confident. That's not even Damien just in mock trial. That's Damien in daily life.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm thinking about myself specifically in mock trial and the way that I can be aggressive towards people that I have to cross-examine or
Oh,
whatnot.
yes.
And I think about if a girl were to be doing that, how would that be seen? Which is something that I don't think about. And you
I
know,
think
you
not
could
even that, Damien. How
yeah.
would it
Oh,
be
I've thought about
perceived?
that a lot, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
What do you
I want to hear from
think?
you,
Yeah,
actually,
what do
yes.
you th what do you think if I was if I was a girl and I had the same attitude that I do that I have towards mock trial now, what do you think the difference would be?
I mean, I've been talking with other girls on our teams who are attorneys, and they say they have to walk a more careful line, I think, with not being perceived as like, I don't want to like curse on here, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't want to be like
Yeah.
perceived as that to the jury or the
Yeah.
judge versus when, like you were like Varun are like all aggressive and confident. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, like they're doing so great and you know, they're being so assertive. But then when a girl on the team does it, it's like, whoa, you know, calm down, being a little rude there. So that's something definitely, I mean, even when I'm doing like responses as a witness, I don't want to come off as too rude or annoying when I think that's something that I think about all the time, and I know other girls on the team do have to keep that in mind when they're being attorneys. So I think it's something that you guys probably aren't as worried about and as being perceived as like too confident and too aggressive. But I think that it's something that the girls on the team are sometimes worried about just because like society sometimes frowns upon
Do
that.
you think
So.
that that's more of an issue? Well, it's an issue with society nonetheless. But my question is, do you think that that's more so an issue with this idea that like a girl? So what I'm trying to get at is, I feel like female confidence has been not as prioritized, right? And what I mean by that is like, you know, there's this idea that men are supposed to keep in their feelings, right, societally. But I feel like females have also been pushed to not express themselves fully. And what I'm trying to get to here, and I can't necessarily find the way to word it, but is it like a matter of you being scared because of the way that you were like, I don't know how to, again, I can't think of the way to word it, but it's like, is it because female personalities more often are not as aggressive because of societal norms, or is it the fact that societal norms have made female personalities that are aggressive seen as, you know, for lack of a better term, the B word, you know, like,
Yeah, no,
right.
that's what I was trying to say.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have personalities. I mean, I know several girls on the mock trial team who are just more aggressive in nature and more assertive, but they're worried about coming across as that to like the judge or the
Okay.
jury. So, I mean, I think it's both, but I definitely think a lot of it, if you have that type of personality more, which I'm sure a lot of women do have that more assertive type of personality. I mean, there can be like more, like less assertive men, less assertive. It goes both ways, but I think they have to worry about more how they're perceived. It's not as they're not confident with themselves. It's just, you know, they want to win a trial and they don't want to be perceived as rude and arrogant to the judge and the jury because that doesn't help you. So I think it's a lot of that too.
That makes
That
sense.
that's what I've been dying to bring out. The fact that it's not necessarily the woman being not confident in herself. It's more the people who are watching and reacting to it, perceiving it as snarky. Or like the
Yeah.
B word, right? It's about perceptions and reactions at the end of the day. Because in the film industry, Emma Watson said this. I keep referring to Emma Watson because she's such a big personality on
Yeah,
this
I
issue.
love Emma Watson. She does so much work for gender equality and just organizations in general, but
Yeah, and I mean, not even just her words. It's often her presence as
yeah.
being this strong character in many circumstances. But beyond that, I mean, she told us that for me to get a role in acting, I have to go to dinner with like seven guys every single day. I have to be around. I've had, she said 12 producers who are 13 producers, 12 of whom are male and one of whom are female, right? She's always around these very powerful women who often, you know, are demeaning towards her, right? Yeah. But she also said that she's had some very open males. It is often just a person's understanding of what the cultural norms are. And I think that even beyond that, women in the film industry, beyond Emma Watson, I always focus on women in the film industry because they tell the news sources and people they know that it's hard to get a lasting role in this field because every single mistake you make, especially as a director or a producer, it has immense consequences upon your perception in the eyes of the audience, your perception in the eyes of, you know, who's directing the movie. And you just have to walk with a brick on your head or a bag on your back. You know, it's always weighing you down.
No, I completely agree. Have you guys?
I want to end on one thing.
Oh yes.
Your gender shouldn't weigh you down, and I think that that's important. But go ahead. I just want to end on a little point.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that makes sense. I was just wondering, have you guys listened to Taylor Swift's song "The Man" at all? I don't know if you've listened to that song.
I'm not a big Swift fan. My girlfriend plays Swift in the car a lot, so I'm sure I've listened to it.
Well, anyway, regardless of if you're a Taylor Swift fan or not, I think it's a really good song to listen to. The lyrics, especially, she's talking about like the double standards, especially that she's had to face in like the entertainment industry and that. She's talking about how like people always criticize Taylor Swift for like, oh my gosh, she dates way too many people and she writes songs about them. And she's talking about how if she was a man, they'd be talking about like, oh, you know, she's a player, she played the field. And every time she gets emotional, you know, they put her down. And just like the double standard that she's constantly facing. And I think it's really true. I got kind of a little emotional, actually, the first time I listened to that song, because I was like, you know, that's something a lot of women have to deal with. But I recommend that song a lot. It's really her highlighting like the double standard she's had to deal with in the industry, which is also, you know, in the movie industry and just like in life in general. So I think you should give that song a listen.
Absolutely. It's called The Man, correct?
Mm-hmm, The Man.
Sure, I have a question, Julia. Do you think the reason for why we reacted so, you know, strongly towards the song was because you're being underrepresented in the community and you didn't get enough support in the past from people who understand what it feels like to be a woman? Or is that something that didn't cause it? Because I feel like sometimes it's like having a voice in the community.
Yeah, I think that's important too. And I think it might have been that too. And also I've loved Taylor Swift ever since I was little. I think I was like her for Halloween when I was 8. And, you know, constantly seeing her being bashed in the media for all these things that men are doing and not getting any, you know, like she's just constantly being bashed. She just at one point she was like, you know, I don't even care anymore. I'm just going to be myself unapologetically. And I really admire her for that. But I think it was, you know, constantly seeing like all this hate that she was facing and her finally putting it into a song, like, look at much how, you know, me and other women have to deal with. I think that was just a really, like, the first time listening to it is almost like, wow, you had to, like, take a minute. But, yeah, that's what I think my reaction was to that.
Absolutely.
Song.
And I want to come back and I want to ask you a little bit because I think that what applies more culturally to us, because I remember growing up in Taylor Swift. I remember just Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber just growing up, like, together, hand in hand, and kind of the difference in that. And I want to talk about that. Yeah, and I also want to talk about this emerging presence in the rap industry of females as well and how that's been received. But before we do so, we're going to take a quick message from our sponsors and we'll be back with that conversation. And we're rolling. Okay, so just to recap for those of us that are rejoining after the ad break, we are here with Julia. She's our research director. She's an incredible young woman. And I mean, she's going to go places. She, you know, helps us out with the podcast a lot. And we're really, really thankful for her. But we're having a conversation specifically this episode about women's issues. And we've touched the subject about, I think, the wealth gap a little bit and how women are generally perceived in entertainment and in media. We talked a little bit about a song, which we hope that you have listened to by now, is called The Man. It was kind of what we finished off on. But we were talking about Taylor Swift, and that was a song by Taylor Swift. And I wanted to bring up, I think first and foremost, I want to talk about this emergence of the females in the rap community, right? And I don't know how necessarily involved you are in it, Julia, but are you like aware of kind of the presence that females are kind of taking now?
Yes, I can't say that I'm a huge rap fan, just being honest. I don't know if you've judged from my taste in Taylor Swift, but I have been following the emergence of, you know, different female rappers that are becoming more prominent. I mean, before it used to pretty much just be like Nicki Minaj, and that's like the only rapper, like female rapper people would talk about. But then there's been the emergence of, you know, several prominent female rappers, and they've been getting a lot of criticism, I think, for their lyrics and things like that when men have been talking about, you know, the same things for years, but when they do it, everyone like freaked out. I remember there was like a whole freak out over that one song, but I just thought that was a little hypocritical. But...
Yeah.
The
I think
idea that,
you go ahead.
If a woman like Cardi B or like the City Girls have the same kind of lyrics and same kind of tone that men use, it's sometimes perceived, and a lot of times it's perceived as, you know, why are they doing that? Why are they overstepping their norms? When, I mean, I don't agree with some stuff that, like, you know, men and women in the rap industry say, obviously, but it comes down to the idea that they're scrutinized for it. Whereas men are definitely not scrutinized for what they say in the rap industry. It's seen as, you know, every time you listen to it, you don't look at the lyrics. But when a woman says it, people find the need to pinpoint every single lyric and understand what it means and why it's not supposed to be there. And it is just a stark comparison, again, between what society believes to be the role of a rapper and how women are trying to fit into that mold and being denied, pushed out of that field because of, you know, who they are, their gender status.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting because I think of two songs. This might get a little bit 18 plus, but I think about you know, the song that I think has faced the most criticism recently. We can't even deny it. It's not even about beating around the bush.
Yeah.
It's WAP or WAP. I refer to it as WAP, right? But it's I don't necessarily know. I feel like women have always faced scrutiny, but I feel like it's just uncomfortable because it's something that we just have never heard, right? A female presence talking about the female perspective of sex, right? Because in the rap industry, I think rap has always had criticism about being about sex and drugs. I think that that's just like the rap stereotype. But that's the thing. It's been the rap stereotype, right? It's been like, if you're a rapper, you talk about sex and drugs, but it's from the male perspective. So it's not... It's kind of just like this thing, right? It's just like, okay, yeah, they talk about sex and drugs. But when it's a girl talking about it, it's like, hey, those words aren't supposed to be coming out of your mouth. That's not what a pretty lady does, right? That's, look how like self-degrading you're being by saying these disgusting things. And I think about, again, and this comes down to me personally. So I think my personal perspective is the song's just gross. Just because... Of how much I think sex is mentioned, but I feel that way about male songs too. But
except with me, honestly, I don't focus upon it in male songs.
Yeah, I think it's you can overlook it.
Focused upon it.
Yes,
right? It's easy to overlook.
I agree 1,000%. And where I see my bias, and I'm just a huge J. Cole fan. So you know, J. Cole has
I have no idea who that is.
Has he, well, he's a rapper, and he has one specific song where he talks about, like, it's literally a story about him having sex for the first time. And like, I listen to that song and I'm like, damn, that's a good song. Look at his lyrical ability and look at how he can piece words together. And like, it almost seems like poetry. But then I go and I listen to this other female song, and I don't know if necessarily it's because one's more vulgar than the other or some underlining kind of thing that I can't necessarily bring up to the top. But neither one of these songs I would listen to in the car with my mom. Nonetheless, right? But
yes, I would hope not.
it's this kind of notion that one's a pretty lady saying it and the other one's this hood, you know, rapper, you know, he's a player, he, you know, that's kind of the story that he's taking. Also, I think another thing is that in the song that I'm mentioning, it's he respects the girl. Like it's also I don't know how to necessarily explain it. That's one thing that you have to consider. He talks about the girl's perspective and he like calls her like beautiful and stuff in the song. And the other song, you know, the one by Cardi B, it kind of just is really, really, really about like sex. I mean, it's just purely about sex, but nonetheless,
go ahead.
I was just going to go. We're getting cut. Go ahead.
Irene, I've been looking up some things previously about, you know, Cardi and Megan, who both did that song. And one of the quotes I thought kind of kind of encompassed, I think, what we're saying. It was saying the WAP uproar shows conservatives are fine with female sexuality as long as men control it. So I think the issue is, like, they're fine talking about these subjects, you know, when it's males doing the rapping,
mm-hmm.
but when women become comfortable with talking about these, like, their, like, female sexuality in a more explicit way, that's when, you know, the line is drawn, because they're okay with it, when men are okay with it, when they're controlling it. So I think that's a big issue too.
Look, I said on the last podcast, guys, I said that normalize what's perceived as unnormal when it doesn't affect you personally, right? It's important for us to understand that these kinds of things that aren't norms in our society, you know, if they don't affect you, why do you have a problem with it? And it comes yeah. back to this big discussion over whether when something doesn't affect you, you got to sit back and say, well, you know what? I may not agree with it. And obviously that's wrong, but I may not agree with it, but I got to accept it. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you just have to make the bigger sacrifice. I mean, it goes beyond women's rights. It goes into, like, LGBTQIA rights. It goes into African-American rights. It goes into minority rights. It goes into everything. It's this idea that you've got to normalize the unnormal to have any chance at moving forward in our society, because there's too many unnormal things that just – there's no reason, right?
Yeah.
You want to have yeah. something that, you know, we have a good platform for everybody on the most basic sense. And that's a fundamental thing for us moving forward, progressivism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the issue is the perspective that it's being told from, right? One's from a man's perspective, right? Man's perspective of sex, and the other one's from a female's perspective of sex. And it's, I guess, you just never hear the other one, so you're not used to it. So it kind of goes back to the thing that you're mentioning, right? Where it's like, that's not a norm, right? It's not normal to hear females talking about it this way. I think about, and this is just something that's absolutely disgusting. I think about when Donald Trump, you know, had the Access Hollywood tape come out, and everyone was like, that's just locker room talk. That's just how men talk. It's like, no, I think about, who's the... It's Jordan Kepler, right, Rune, the comedian that works on The Daily Show?
Yeah, that's Jordan Kepler.
Yeah, he goes and he asks, you know, he asks about the Access Hollywood tape, and he asks, you know, both men and females, is that how you talk to men?
Yeah.
And they were like, no. Is that how your dad talks? No. You know, is that how you...
Yeah, I saw that video. Yeah.
And it's just this idea where it's like, well, then why is it okay in society, right?
Yeah, those comments were disgusting, and I think it really shows how little respect he has for women in general, and the fact that so many people are able to overlook that, I find that troubling personally.
Yeah, and speaking about these comments, I think that I want to move on to kind of the issue of workplace sexual harassment and the Me Too movement, because that's something that we, I don't think we can overlook if we're going to talk about women's, you know, women advocating, women speaking up. I think that even Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion's presence in the rap community, I think that we can easily say was fueled by the Me Too movement, right? This woman empowerment movement.
Yeah.
But how, you know, how can we bring up this conversation of sex place or workplace, sex place if you're at Fox News, but workplace harassment, without making people uncomfortable? And I don't even know if it's about without making people uncomfortable. It's, how do we acknowledge this? Because we did it in the Me Too movement, and I remember thinking, like, I mean, it was something that was great and something that was empowering, but I always remember seeing the comments that it was like, you know, oh, this is fake, blah, 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 it's fake. What have you personally ever experienced, like, catcalling or something like that? Because, you know, it's something that can be overlooked, and it's just, like, men,
you know,
being men.
It's a hard topic. If you don't want to mention it,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's absolutely fine.
No, it's fine. I mean, I've had, like, inappropriate comments and things like that happen, and I remember always feeling bad, like it was my fault. Like, you know, what did I do to provoke that reaction? And then I realized, like, that's dumb, you know, if someone, and I feel like that was kind of a thing that society has had reinforced.
Oh, yeah.
But then I was like, you know, if someone's going to make a comment like that, I'm going to call them out on it, because, and even if then they get all upset and like, you know, it's just a compliment, but it's not. And I think bringing up like sexual harassment in the workplace, I think it's good that people, like men especially, you know, sexual harassment can go both ways, obviously, but people are going to actually have to start checking their comments and their actions. And if that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, like, so be it, you know, like, I think it's good that people are having to start to reevaluate things that they think okay to stay in the office when they're really not. So I think even if it makes some people uncomfortable, then I think the people obviously that are being harassed are obviously have been way more uncomfortable. So I think it's something that the conversation still needs to continue.
Yeah, it's about
You
provoking
like
the
kind of,
conversation. Go ahead, Brent.
yeah, kind of what like what Blair said. It's very similar to what Blair Erskine, one of our previous guests, an amazing guest on our podcast, said. But I think that the bigger issue, Julie, you kind of hit on it in your kind of little thing. But I think that the bigger issue is when a woman is harassed or sexually molested, the first thing, the most arguably the biggest response and the defense that the man gives is that she asked for it, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it's embedded within society, this notion of whenever something happens towards me, I'm getting catcalled or I'm getting abused sexually. It's always this idea of am I the perpetrator? Right? And
Yeah.
that's a mentality we cannot have in our society. And it's reinforced. You're 100% right, because it's reinforced by the actions of men. Everything that's happening in this kind of context is because of men. The idea of women's mentalities of being, it's my fault. It may be my fault. It's very rarely is it a woman's fault.
Yeah, I
It's
don't
very
it's yeah,
rarely
it's
is it a
obviously
woman's
never
fault.
Yeah.
someone's fault, men or women. It's never going to be their fault if someone makes the choice to assault or harass them. And I mean, I've been told before, like I used to go to a private school, not naming names or anything, but at that school they were very prominent about, your skirt length is too short or your homecoming dress. I mean, I was basically like I felt really degraded, like they unapproved my homecoming dress the day before
Wow.
and made me come in to school. I mean, for a freshman, that's very stressful. The day before homecoming, having to like possibly try and find a new dress, and they had me try it on, and they said, well, you need to pull it up, pull it down. No, actually, they told me I couldn't wear heels with the dress, and it was something that it was a cute little innocent dress, and I felt confident in it. And they're saying, basically like you're gonna be harassed, and like basically, you're asking for it. What's gonna happen if you wear this? And I think the fact that that's told to young girls really reinforces that idea. And especially, don't even get me started on the dress code at schools, because I also think that's ridiculous as well, and kind of reinforces the whole asking for it thing.
Yeah, and I think that we've talked about it before. I think that it also degrades men in a sense, right? Obviously, it degrades women, but it's like I can sit in a classroom with a girl wearing shorts without me going like swinging my arms around and flailing like a monkey. Like, I can.
I mean, then again, Damien, the problem is a lot of kids can't.
Yeah,
That's the issue. A lot of men can't do it.
fair. But I want to talk about something also, which is. We have to be willing to have these conversations both ways, right? Because I remember seeing this video not too long ago where it was this man that was abused, right? And we talk about women and how we say, they asked for it. This guy would post pictures or would send pictures to his friends and family about like, the bruises that he had on his body. And they would ask, what did you do to her? Like, what did you do to deserve it? And I think that that's also like a societal construct, right?
No, yeah, that's
It, it
horrible.
it's
People think that abuse, it can go both ways, definitely,
yeah.
and it needs to be looked at closely in both scenarios. I mean, that whole idea that men, just should have to take it and keep their emotions in. I mean, I think that's a very toxic cultural norm that's kind of been accepted, and that definitely needs to be
But
reversed.
they, I think they go hand in hand with each other, right? This idea
Yeah, that's true.
that one, if a girl is sexually, harassed, she asked for it. And if a man is physically harassed, he asked for it or he did something. And both of them, we have to acknowledge that it's not the victim's fault, right? We have
Definitely.
to look at it at a clean slate in every single circumstance. Maybe in some circumstances, the victim could have done something different. And we need to have that conversation as a society. Right? But I can assure you in 99% of circumstances that it's going to be the perpetrator. The
Yeah,
perpetrator
I mean,
is going to be the one that committed the act.
yeah, and I think even, I mean, in all scenarios that are like, someone hits someone or like sexually assaulted, I mean, I think that's always, 100% the perpetrator's fault. I mean, regardless of what decisions the victim made, I don't think, that's obviously not on them what someone else chose to do. So.
I mean, I think that going back to your discussion, Julia, on dress code, part of the
Yeah.
issue with having such a stringent dress code is because, well, first of all, I think that the fact that we need one, is incredibly, like Damien said, a kind of testament to who we are as a society and where we need to go. But the fact of the matter is that putting a dress code out that's so stringent, like you said, is damage control, right? It's mitigating the consequences instead of what I believe we should do. And that's look at what's causing us to even have a dress code, right? What do men believe? What kind of societal constructs exist in our society which make men believe that they can take advantage of a woman, right? And look at a woman and think these kinds of things. These are the things we have to focus upon. And sure, we have to do some damage control and mitigate the consequences by having a dress code. But I think the bigger issue is reteaching the way we think about gender, right? Because I've always believed... Yeah, absolutely. Because I've always believed this. I've always believed that a person is born as a blank slate. Society imposes things on people. And I think that with that notion of a blank slate mentality, it's a psychological theory, right? And with that kind of notion and theory, you can kind of make your own decisions and be more inclusive and have a role to play. Because if we're assuming that a person is born into a blank slate, right, we can do things to help them become more inclusive and to not think these kinds of things to where we get to the point to where we don't have to experience things like a dress code because we accept things as a societal norm. You know, men don't have a dress code. The reason why is because we accept things as a societal norm. Mm-hmm. You know, that men, women don't look at men that way. That's a societal norm apparently. Yeah. And I think that we have to include different societal norms under this umbrella to bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. It's about not only... To wrap it up, not only mitigating the consequences, but it's about understanding what causes these things and stopping what causes them.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, you because you're talking about the blank slate, and that just reminded me. I was having a conversation with my sister the other day. My sister's 6 years old, just for context, and she's learning a lot through virtual school. I think that she's learning a lot from what I can tell, and she has like art classes and virtual school and such, and so she's been learning a lot about art, and so she comes to me. And I'm sure that her teacher didn't teach her this, just for context. I think that this is just something, because they're learning the opposites of colors. But she comes to me and she tells me, Damien, do you know what the opposite of pink is? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know what. And she tells me blue. And I'm like, huh, wow. Why? And she was like, because pink is for girls and blue is for boys. And I was like, oh, oh, wow. I was like, I don't think that's how that works. And I was like trying to be nice about it, but it was like this thing. And I'm sure that, again, the teacher didn't teach her that, but it's kind of like when you're learning the opposites of colors, it's...
Teachers don't teach these things explicitly. They get fired for it.
Yeah.
People learn these things from society.
Yeah, exactly.
These are things that people teach. These are things that you become born into.
It's the fact that the teacher shows up with a pink dress, right? It's the fact that the teacher... It's like these implicit like things that we don't even notice as society.
It's the fact, again... It's the fact that your Happy Meal toy is pink.
Yeah,
that's
there
the
you
most
go.
Simple thing. Yeah. Your Happy Meal toy.
Yeah, yeah. But nonetheless, you want to know how I know that we're having a really good conversation?
Why?
We haven't hit on the point that we were supposed to hit on, which was abortion.
It was.
Oh, we haven't hit on that. But no, I want to hear Julia address this point about. I guess we've already kind of addressed it, but do you have anything to add, Julia?
Yeah.
On abortion or this?
On this.
About like the societal.
Yeah, about society.
Kind of societal, growing up in a society like, you know, the women grow up in.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's definitely true. I mean, even, you know, ever since you're little, you're told, I mean, I don't know if you guys probably don't have the same experience, obviously, but like as a girl, you know, like, oh, like, you know, you have your dolls and you have your kitchen and there's no issue if a girl wants to play with that. Like I personally... My parents, I think, were always very good of being like, you can pick out whatever toy you want to play with, whether it be a car or a Barbie. And my personality, I really love dolls and there's no issue with that. But my younger sister, she always preferred like the Hot Wheels and that sort of thing. So I think it's really important for parents to reinforce the idea that there's no, you know, gender on toys and there's no gender in color. And I think, you know, it's important to start that at a young age, you know, to have that conversation with your sister, like, no, like it doesn't matter, you know, blue can be for anyone and same for pink. And I think it really starts young. And I think it's important to have those conversations with kids as they're little because it's harder to unteach something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, personally, I think I look bomb in pink.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love the color pink. I mean, yeah. I wore pink. I bought pink shoes a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
And I did. I bought pink slides, right?
And oh, yeah.
I bought That's pink unfresh. Slides. I had those. Do you remember? I had the pink slides.
I don't remember them, but they sound fresh.
No, yeah, I had them. I wore them to school. And I got so many looks, and I was like,
that's
why?
Weird. That's weird.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just why? And I'm telling you, because I didn't expect it, right?
Yeah.
I don't have this perception. Back then, I didn't. I had no idea that society could be so disinclusive. I was an innocent freshman in high school. Not last year. I think it was a freshman year, but I was an innocent freshman. I had no idea. And when I come in and wear these pink slides, I see what's actually happening. Now, I want to move on to abortion, but I do want to kind of bring up.
What a segue. I want to move on to abortion.
What a segue. What an abrupt way to move on. I usually segue better than that, Damien. I don't know why it was so abrupt this time. I'm usually better at it. If you guys have watched, I'm usually better. I'll try to think of something. But anyways, I want to kind of look at what Julia said about, you know, parents reinforcing it. It's not only about, you know, parents reinforcing it, it's about parents doing it over and over and over again and telling people that beyond their childhood, checking up on a person and saying, what are you experiencing and how can I help with it? Because when a parent, you know, helps a child in his or her infancy, you know, get rid of these racial and societal norms, it only does so much, right? Because when a person goes into the real world and goes past their parents' grips, they experience social norms and things like this, which they can't hide away from. Mm-hmm. And I think that at that point, parents have to do a better job at looking at what a child faces and then coming back and saying, you know, what can we do to help you, right? Because a parent guiding something is always a friendly voice, also having a community. Those are all important. I do want to talk about on the topic of women's rights and the disparity that we have.
There we go.
It's a better segue. There we go.
Yeah.
It's not the best segue. I'll tell you, it's not the best segue.
I don't think that there can be a clean segue to abortion.
At least it's a segue.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to just say we're moving on to abortion now, but we are moving on to abortion now. And I want to hear, just to begin, what is the biggest issue with how we look at abortion in our society, Julia?
Personally, I think the biggest issue with abortion. Okay, so first of all, I'd like to like give some of my like personal viewpoint, I guess.
Absolutely.
So my viewpoint, I guess, is a little unique. I don't know how common this is, but I'm Catholic and I'm also pro-choice. And I think a lot of times people get really upset about that and they're like, oh my gosh, no, like you're going to hell. Like I've had people basically tell me that before. And my viewpoint is on it, like, let people do, like, you know, if a woman, for whatever personal reason, like, if she has a reason to want to get an abortion, that's her business. And I don't think anyone else should get a say on it. Like, I personally would not get one because that contradicts my religious beliefs, but I would never force that upon another person,
yeah.
If that makes sense. So I think a big issue with abortion is everyone trying to, like, be in everyone else's business. And it's like, can everyone just, you know, step back and let people handle their own bodily, you know, autonomy? So I think that's one of the biggest issues is people just, especially men, I think, wanting to like insert themselves in this conversation and make decisions over women's bodies when I really think it should be up to the individual women. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think this is one of the only times that pro-choice Catholics are going to be the majority in any conversation, because I'm also Catholic and I'm Catholic with the least severe implication of that word. I am a born and raised Catholic, and I practice when I can sometimes.
That's me too.
I practice occasionally sometimes. But nonetheless, I think that from my perspective, and I have a question for you, but just from my perspective, the issue is that pro-choice, and we talked about it last episode, because I don't think that it's not okay for a man to have a conversation about abortion with another man. I think that it's the way in which that conversation is carried, right? It's about, are we making a distinction in this conversation about a woman, what she can and cannot do? And I don't think we did that on the last podcast. I think what we did was we talked about the semantics behind pro-choice and pro-life. And something that I find myself struggling with is that pro-choice is not pro-abortion. As you mentioned, I like to refer to myself as pro-choice, but pro-life, right? Pro, an advocate for people to be able to make the choice between abortion and, you know, whatever you want to refer to it as, life, between abortion and opportunity. I think that that's a better word for it, because I don't know even scientifically a fetus is considered a life. So, you know, is it the decision between killing the opportunity for life or letting the opportunity for life blossom and see what it is? And I think that individually comes down to every single person's morals, right? Or maybe it's not even an issue of morals. It can be an issue of I'm sure that there's some people that are pro-life and their financial situation and some unfortunate circle. Hell, I mean, I don't even have to speculate. There, I can assure you have been women that are pro-life and have been raped. And they cannot, they, I would not, I can't even imagine myself in that situation, right? And these are pro-life women that have to make the tough decision of terminating their pregnancy. That doesn't mean that they're pro-abortion, right? That just means that their circumstance put them down a wrong path. And I think that's something, interesting about the Catholic perspective is that, man, Catholics are so judgmental, right? So
Yeah, the good old
judgmental.
Catholic guilt
And I think
is
that we all as a society are judgmental. But like, it's this idea where if we want to bring religion into it, because nonetheless, if we're gonna be blatant here, abortion isn't a conversation about murder or this or that. It's a conversation about religion. And we have to see it for what it is. And if we're going to talk about the religious perspective of it, we also have to know that, again, I practice when I want to. And just to mention, God will put you down a unique path. And I don't think that we as people can judge that path that he puts you down. And I don't think that we can make decisions based on our circumstances if he hasn't put us down that path. But
Yeah, exactly.
yeah,
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead.
that's my whole thing with it. First of all, like separation of church and state, everyone's beliefs and views are going to be different. And I think if a woman needs to have or wants to have an abortion for whatever reason, that's her decision. We don't know what circumstances she's going through and what led her to have to do that or want to do that or need to do that. But I think, as it comes down to it, like that's her business and she should have the choice to make that decision. And I think that's what you're saying. We're not in that situation, so I don't think it's really fair for anyone else to make a judgment on that.
Yeah, and everyone's situation is unique. My
Right.
question to
And
you, go ahead. I was just gonna ask, where does a man fit into this? Where what is the male role in this conversation about abortion?
mine ha okay, I feel like the I've always said the no uterus, no opinion, and I think that comes down to making the laws about it. I don't think that men should be excluded from the conversation, and I think it's good to hear different perspectives. But I think when it comes down to it, men should not be making decisions or regulating women's rights to make decisions with their own bodies. I think that should be up to a decision that's, up to every woman individually, not, and I don't think men personally should have a say in what a woman does with her own body, but that's just my viewpoint on it. It might be extreme, I don't know, but
Oh, it's
I
you.
don't
It's
think
your
it's extreme
perspective.
at all. I think that it's a lot of our perspectives. Last time on the podcast, we talked about, Damien asked the question, can we talk about abortion without a woman? And I think all of us said no, right?
And
Because
then we
the
did
fact of the matter are
it.
really.
Yeah, we talked about pro-choice and pro-life. I don't know necessarily
We
if it was about
talked about it, but
abortion, but
he was like, can we really talk about abortion
yeah,
without a woman?
exactly. Can you
And
really
I think
talk
we
about
were
it?
like, no, you can't really talk. You can streamline the facts and say, well, I think the main thing a man can do is say that, it's not my choice to make, right? It's a woman's body and it's a woman's choice. That's the issue here. When you have men adjudicating what a woman can do with her body, and when you look at the world scope of it internationally, when the US is scrutinizing Roe v. Wade and going back on our regular Supreme Court decisions, developing countries like India are coming forward and saying, I want a progressive approach towards abortions to allow more abortions. And these developing countries are often doing much more progressive things than our nation. It's funny to see how developing countries, not funny, but it's saddening, actually, to see how developing countries are making better strides than our nation on this issue. Because I think that sometimes you have to look at case examples, right? I was on the Nikema Williams episode, which was, I don't know how long ago, like a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, maybe more than a month ago, I don't know. But I was pro-life with exceptions at that point. And that was the one point in which I shifted from my party standpoint. And I talked about this in the last podcast. I talked about the fact that the two reasons for why I am now pro-choice, three actually. Number one, I don't want to make this about myself, but number one, it was because I feel like that choice is not in my hand, first and foremost. Second of all, I feel like when a woman doesn't want to abort a baby and wants to put up a baby for adoption, what does that entail? Our adoption system is incredibly, incredibly flawed, beyond any remorse. We have to fix that system immediately before we can even talk about, having abortion only allowed in certain circumstances. And number three, it was what Nikema Williams told me. She told me that in certain societies where abortions are banned, what happens is that women often resort to having abortions done on the side and in an illegal way and in a non-healthy way, which actually increases the death of children. Not children, but the death of these fetuses, the death of these, and moreover, it's the death of these mothers, right? Having unhealthy abortions, unsafe abortions, out of a necessity and a need causes the death of mothers. And I think that when you make abortions illegal, you don't stop the impact. You
Yeah,
only
you don't stop
you make
abortion, you make it worse.
them exactly, because abortion is partly just a channel for women to do what they're going to do either way.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a matter of whether or not it's going to be able to be done in a safe way or in a dangerous way. Like, I was doing some research on abortions in especially like a lot of Latin American countries where abortion is in some places illegal in all circumstances. Like, there's no exceptions in some of these countries. And what happens is these women are, throwing themselves down the stairs or doing back alley abortions, and this is can lead to the, the death of the fetus and the woman. And a lot of something that's becoming more common, and I think it was Chile, was that women are using these pills. It's some drug that's safer for a, like non a, abortion, not in a doctor's office. But then the issue is the what the pill causes looks really it causes like a miscarriage. So now the doctors aren't able to tell when a woman has a natural miscarriage or if it was induced by these pills. So now you have a doctor's office being a terrifying place for women because they don't know if they're going to be prosecuted for it. So you have these women who suffered a miscarriage or traumatized, and now the doctor's room, the room is becoming like a crime scene. So now they're being like put in jail for simply having a miscarriage because there's really no way to tell if it was from the pill or not. So then doctor's offices are becoming these places where women are scared to go. They're not coming in for appointments earlier. So it's just, it really creates even more of a mess. Like you were saying, abortions are going to happen either way. It's a matter if it's going to be in a safe way or not. So banning it isn't going to stop anything. It's really just going to make it worse. If you really want to go back and maybe fix like how we talk about, like tubal tie, like tubal, like is that the right term? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like tying the tubes. Is that
Sure. We know what
understand
you're
it.
talking about.
I
Yeah,
understand it.
and yeah, right now there are a lot of laws that make it really hard for women to do that. And I think in a lot of you have to like get the permission of your husband in a lot of states to do that. So I think before you even look at abortion, you need to go back and look at this and other things that would prevent these pregnancies. And there's still laws preventing women from doing that. And like with birth control and the Trump's administration's attacks on insurance companies providing birth control to families. So I really think that you really need to go back and fix these issues before you even look at that. But
Well,
if that makes sense.
another
It's
thing
not even
is,
just birth control, right? I want to bring up this point, and Damien, I'm interrupting you right
no
now. So,
worries.
I want to bring up the fact that the Trump administration has attacked Planned Parenthood, and the alt right has attacked Planned Parenthood. Not even alt right, the right wing media, right wing politicians. And the fact of the matter is that abortion services only really apply to 3% of all Planned Parenthood situations. They test for STDs. They do cancer screenings, preventions, other women's health services. Planned Parenthood has so many benefits to women's health, and the fact that they seclude 3% of all Planned Parenthood purposes towards abortions, and they just say, this is why Planned Parenthood needs to be taken away. It not only, affects women seeking an abortion or a birth control. It's the fact of the matter is that, when you take away these services, it affects women's overall health. And I think
Yeah,
that in and of
it
itself is
does.
ignorant. It's ignorant, and it just causes the amount of scrutiny women face for even thinking about birth control, abortion.
Yeah, it's
Do what's right for
dangerous.
you. Right. And
Yeah.
you're talking about scrutiny, right? Nkemah Williams mentioned this. In Venezuela, women, like you said, whenever a woman has a miscarriage, first of all, a miscarriage is going to hurt you a lot. It is going to hurt both the woman and the man, but disproportionately the woman a lot. And when you have to deal with the consequences of whether I should go into a doctor, if I'm going to get prosecuted, women shouldn't have to deal with that. Nobody, no human being should have to deal with the fact of juggling a miscarriage, your baby literally dying in the womb, and not being aware or safe in your shoes in a hospital and a doctor taking care of you. A human being shouldn't have to face that. And the fact that we have human beings facing these kinds of things internationally, not even just that, women not getting birth control, women not getting these types of abortion systems, Women not getting jobs, women not being able to do things without, you know, their husband's support, women being confined to the house, supporting their kids and educating their kids and making food. These things happen every single day beyond the USA. I want to just talk about the broad scope of things. These things happen every single day in very, very stringent and pronounced situations. And we can't forget the fact that women across the world are suffering. Women in this nation are suffering. And we can't forget the woman. And as I forget what her name was, I think it's Elizabeth Cady something. She mentioned it. We can't forget the woman.
Are you talking about Remember the Ladies?
Remember the Ladies. That's what it was.
Because that was Abigail Adams, I believe.
Abigail Adams. There we go. Yes. There we go. I knew I learned it last year.
Her husband did forget the ladies and he didn't include them, but he did try.
Yeah. No. Well, one thing that I want to mention here is we're talking about international things, which I think is completely irresponsible. And I think it's irresponsible for one thing. We haven't even solved the issue here domestically, right? How can we be a leader in the world if we can't even be progressive enough in our own country? Varun talks about, you know, these developing nations being progressive. They're going to be the next leaders, right? They're going to take the footsteps. They're going to be the one that go into Venezuela and advocate for human rights, because being able to have a miscarriage, a regardless of what you think about, you know, the science of it, being able to have a miscarriage, it's something that some women have absolutely no control over. And to feel that you're going to be prosecuted over that is so, so, so wrong. But what do we have to say about it when it's completely possible that we're going to be dealing with the same exact issues here in the United States if we don't deal with these situations responsibly? So what I'm saying is,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying we need to deal with it domestically before we go into Venezuela and start telling them what to do. It goes on this perspective of, you know, I mean that's really all that there is to it. We can't go in and be these leaders in these other countries if we can't even offer, you know, human rights to females. But one thing that I wanted to mention, Brune, is I remember that you were talking about how you believe, or you were pro-life until, you know, Nkema Williams, and you were pro-life except for it was rape, incest, and what was the other one?
Life.
The mother's life. So what I'm thinking here is I think that you're still pro-life in the case of rape, incest, and the mother's life. But that's your decision, right? If you were in a relationship, that's what you'd value. That's what you'd push forward, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with you.
I think that makes it pro-choice, though. I think
exactly.
So it
and
really
I was being a bigot.
You know?
I get how bigoted I was being, and recognizing that for a lot of people makes all the difference. So go ahead, Julia.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think when people say, you know, like for me, people say, well, doesn't that mean you're pro-life because you personally would what they call choose life? But I'm like, no, that makes me pro-choice because I want other people to make the choices that they want. So when people are like, well, you're pro-choice and pro-life, I'm like, no, you're pro-choice because you allow other people to make their own decisions. So I think people forget that too, you know, but if that,
There's the question, Julia, you mentioned it. There's the question of whether you can impose your own viewpoints on somebody else. And I think that by being pro-life, you assume that it's okay to impose your own personal viewpoints on somebody else, right? It's part of that assumption. Number one, it's your personal viewpoints. Number two, it's that your personal viewpoints have to be imposed on somebody else. And that's what makes up this kind of mentality. And I lived through it. I wish I was a pro-lifer for a very long time. And I lived through the second part of it, you know, being able to impose my personal viewpoints. Thinking about that, I believe that fundamentally, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in the fact that we have to impose what we believe in on anybody else unless it affects us directly.
Yeah.
Right? Crime affects us directly. Sure, I can impose my own viewpoints, but abortions do not affect me directly. They don't. And that's, I want to mention also, speaking about, I was going to interject here and mention this, but now's a better time. Speaking about international diplomacy, I think that honestly, Damien, beyond even, you know, sexual, gender rights and things like this, the U.S. hasn't been advocating for anything.
Absolutely.
We're out of the WHO. We're out of this. So many global coalitions, the WTO, so many global
Paris
coalitions
climate agreement.
That can solve Paris Climate Accords, right? Executive agreement. We've been out of so many agreements to where we can't have a good footing until this next presidency, whoever, maybe we have to reinstate that footing. And I think that part of the issue, we're going to have Simon Anholt on, I think on November 3rd, coming on to now, maybe that date, but I'm not sure. He's a very, very big kind of activist for cooperation between countries. And I think that part of international diplomacy. And the best thing with international diplomacy is that you can figure out what went right for a country, right? You know, Julia mentioned Chile. I mentioned Venezuela. Each of these countries have stringent abortion laws, and look how it's working out for them. I think that before you even propose legislation, you have to consider, how is it working out for somebody else? Gun rights legislation, things like that. We have to consider how it's working out for other people. And on the advocacy standpoint, I mean, if we're not advocating for Uyghur Muslims in China, yep, being tortured every single day, and that's something that every American, I know they don't agree with torture. I know American people as a whole don't agree with torture. And abortion being a controversial issue and us not standing up for it, it goes to show that, like, we can't even stand up for the most blatant issues for Americans. These issues won't get any support unless we find a solution.
Yeah, well, it's reasonable. I mean, you're talking about the Uyghur concentration camp, the Uyghur Muslim concentration camps, and that's absolutely horrible. But let's talk about the border then, right? How are we going to go in and tell someone to not have concentration camps and not put people in cages when we have kids in cages separated from their parents? It goes back to this double. Exactly. We need to stop being, you know, hypocrites, because for a long time, America was the nation leading, right? And we've fallen behind. And I don't know if you can, I think that it was before the Trump administration. I think that it was, you know, that the Trump administration was a catalyst, to say the least. I think that our international diplomacy has fallen behind in certain circumstances. But something that we've never seen a president not do is stand up for our allies, right? Every single president, it's almost in their inaugural address, they mention, as the United States, who are we if we do not stand up for our allies? But who the hell are we if we don't stand up for the people within our drawn lines on a map?
I think we should try to stop, obviously, what's going on in China. It's horrible, but we also can't forget about the own issues that are going on in America as well right now, because I feel like people are like, you know, everything's fine here, but it's really not. And I think you can't forget about that, like you were saying, like, there are literally children in cages being separated from their parents at the border, and that's a fact that people just love to overlook and not think about. And that to me is just very, very concerning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we're running over our time frame, yep, so I want to kind of wrap it up a little.
Yeah,
but I want to end by saying one thing. I was doing some research, guys, on wartime efforts. If you guys want to follow my cause, it's on Instagram at save.thestudents, shameless plug. But I was doing some research, and it applies to this, because
that account. I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah, I'm working with the Youth Action Campaign, a host that I do some things, Red Cross. So I think one of the things that I found out researching wartime desensitization, sorry about that, it's a hard word, but it's the idea of pseudo inefficiency, which is the unwillingness of people to contribute to causes if they have partial solutions, right? If I'm contributing to kids in Africa, whereas I'm helping 20 kids and 100,000 kids are going hungry, it doesn't make me feel good about myself.
Yep.
That's a thing psychologically called pseudo inefficiency, right? And this is a concept with everything we're facing right now, even with the Uyghur Muslims, with women, with concentration camps. When you're helping part of them, you're not helping all of them. And I think that people have to consider that even a partial solution remains a solution. You're still helping those 20 people, even though you're not helping the 100,000 people. And having maybe even 1,000 extensions of you can help more people. But when people get drawn up in this thing of pseudo inefficiency and don't make that first step, what does that say about our people and what we can do? When we have a global coalition, when everybody is contributing to this, it goes back to international relationships. People in America, our country, believes that if we have one thing going on, the most common argument, guys, the most common argument about climate change is that even if we enter back in the Paris Climate Agreement and do things for the climate, it won't do enough because no country's going to follow us, right? It's this idea of pseudo inefficiency at our nation's highest level. And we have to bridge that gap and say, well, even if every single country does not commit to the Paris Climate Agreement and doesn't make steps to help our environment, which they have, but even without that, we're still helping the environment in some way, shape, or form. And we're helping influence global policy. So is it really a partial solution, or is it the first step towards a complete solution?
Absolutely.
And, yeah, that's true.
And with that being said, Julia, we want to ask you the final question that we ask all of our guests. And that is, if you had one saying, one quote, one thing, one message that you could leave to America's youth, your peers right now, what would it be?
I don't know if I have quotes necessarily off the top of my head,
Just
but
from you. I mean, a message from you.
Okay, so I mean, I guess going back to what we were saying earlier, an important message would I think just be being aware in different situations, especially if you're a man and you're in a conversation and you find yourself mansplaining or blaming it on a woman's emotion, and just taking a step back and being aware of, the negative implications of what you're doing. And I think a lot of change is going to come with people reevaluating what they do, because I think a lot of it's not intentional. So I think that could be something for people to think about.
Absolutely. And a big part of being aware, ladies and gentlemen, is having conversations and not shying away from the uncomfortable conversations and being able to admit when you're wrong. And so we want to invite all of you to go ahead and do that. Have those conversations, whether it be with someone across the aisle or someone that's a different gender than you. Be sure that you're having conversations every single
Yeah,
day.
and look, let me speak from a personal note.
Yeah.
I made a mistake a couple of weeks ago. I made a mistake in being pro-life and not understanding that what I believe cannot be imposed on anybody else. What I believe remains what I believe. And so I want to make it clear that no matter what you believe right now, be fluid in what you think. Because every single time you're exposed to a new conversation, a new perspective, a new fact, be okay with change. Because change
Absolutely.
is the only way we can succeed as a society and break these kinds of social norms that Julia continually mentioned during this podcast.
Yeah, no,
Absolutely.
and I think we did when we were talking about different genders. I think just, to reiterate that it's not, male, female, gender neutral, non-binary, whatever you identify as, that's still all gender. I wasn't sure if I came across as strictly male or female. I'm talking about, all genders. So
Yeah,
just to make
absolutely.
sure
And
that's clear.
again, it's that inclusiveness. It's being willing to have a
Yeah.
conversation, and
Yeah, that's important.
that's really the American way. And it's being able to, as Varun did, say when you're wrong. And that's something that we really need to all do in order to move forward. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to also go and check us out on all social media platforms. It's at Politine Show on both Instagram and Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast if you have not already. Check out our Patreon. That is the best way that you can support us, and it's also the best way that you can get in contact with us. We're gonna have some cool stickers, some cool merch, and some just amazing overall things coming out on the pod or for the podcast over on Patreon. Instagram is also an amazing way to interact with us. I think that we're extremely active on Instagram. We're trying to gain some social media presence, and we want to thank all of you for tuning in today's episode. I want to thank Julia for coming on and having an amazing conversation. I want to thank
Yeah, of
Varun
course. Yeah.
for, as always, giving insight, asking questions that need to be asked, and really providing fuel to this conversation that we had here today. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to yet another episode of Politine. Be sure to tune in either this Friday again or Monday for the next episode, depending on when you're listening to this. But again, new episodes every Friday and Monday. So whenever you are listening to this, be sure to be on the lookout for whenever the next episode is coming out. But nonetheless, ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Politine Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/politinepodcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is once again www.patreon.com/politinepodcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/politinepodcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.politinepodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Politine. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.